Everybody, this is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak live on BBS Radio every Tuesday night at 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time or by going to our website, www.thepeoplespeakradio.org. There you can also listen to our past shows on our iPod Ready Archive section. That's www.thepeoplespeakradio.org. Tonight, the people speak with an incredible woman, Julia Butterfly. She's an environmentalist and the founder of the Circle of Life Foundation. Julia brought international attention to the plight of the world's last remaining ancient forest when she climbed 180 feet up to a 1,000-year-old redwood tree and refused to come down. Her historic 738-day protest of the environmental destruction caused by clear-cutting ancient redwoods culminated with a negotiated agreement that provided permanent protection for the tree. The tree was named Luna, and a nearly 3-acre buffer zone surrounding Luna. Julia is a writer, a poet, and an activist. She's the author of the national bestseller, The Legacy of Luna, and co-author of One Makes a Difference. Hello, how are you, Julia? Welcome to our show.
Thank you so much, Basma. It's great to be with you.
Well, it's our pleasure. You know, this movie is really a big thing. From my understanding, you're going to be starting filming this year.
Well, it's a typical Hollywood fashion. It's a dance that's one step forward, three steps sideways. There's so many moving parts trying to get everything lined up at the same time. So their goal is to begin shooting this year, but with film production, you never quite know until the film is actually rolling.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll keep the fingers on my toes crossed for you, and let's hope that they get this thing going. One thing I would like to ask is, from my understanding, is that part of the commitment is that this is a green set. What is a green set exactly when it comes to filmmaking?
Well, when I first was approached by the producers for the film currently titled Luna, I told them that I had some certain non-negotiables, and this was quite a few years ago, actually. And at that time, there wasn't really much talk of greening Hollywood or anything. There was a little bit with Environmental Media Association and organizations like that, but it hadn't reached kind of the crescendo that it's hit now with ecological catering and awareness of where the films are being shot and what's happening to the environment where the films are being shot. But for me, the green set is actually my commitment that everything that I do has to match my commitments of the world that I want to live in. And this doesn't mean that there's necessarily a way to film with perfection with a footprint on the planet, but how can we make sure that our footprint is as light as possible and that we do as much as we can to give more than we take? So a green set would include the very basics, like no tropical woods and no endangered wood used in the set, recycling on site, but going beyond that to all organic catering, composting all of the catering, running generators off of vegetable biodiesel instead of the regular petroleum-based diesel, having an on-site forester to make sure that any filming that's done within the forest leaves no trace of the forest when we're gone and actually restores anything that might be damaged just by people walking around, things like that. The list actually goes on pretty long on what it would take to have a green set, including offsetting all the carbons, which we've already been doing even before production. All the pre-production carbon footprint has been offset with wind power purchased from native energy, which is a majority native-owned wind power company, so that we're not only giving back to the planet, but we're giving back to the first peoples where the wealth of the planet was originally stolen from.
Well, you know, we had a previous guest on our show, Sarah Haynes, who was very involved in green concerts and many of the things that you're speaking of. So we are a little bit familiar. We're not too green here at the People Speak.
Yeah, we actually worked with Sarah Haynes.
We're not green enough, actually.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I said, we're not green enough, actually. We really need to get more serious about green. And you said something about Sarah?
Oh, just that we've worked with her for many years. I actually started working with Sarah while I was still in Luna via telephone conferencing into a tour she used to produce called Spitfire. And that was when I first connected with Sarah Haynes, and we've worked together over the years, and it's really exciting to see how she chose to focus 100% of her production skills and energy into only producing green events and working with companies that have an environmental and social consciousness. So it's really exciting to kind of see that wave growing in this country where people are starting to wake up and realize, wow, we actually need to think, what is our impact on the planet? What is our impact on each other every step of the way?
Well, I know that Sarah thinks highly of you. She spoke of you on the show, and she really, really does think a lot of you. Let me talk to you about Luna. You know, it's when you name a tree, suddenly it creates, I think, a bigger image of a living legacy. Luna is alive.
Yes, Luna is alive and thriving, and the grove around Luna is alive and thriving. I actually didn't name the tree Luna. Earth First activists who began the tree sit during the full moon of October of 1997 named the tree Luna in honor of the full moon that guided them to bring up the ropes and the platforms and the supplies into the tree, because at that time, loggers were actually deputized by the sheriff to be able to arrest activists. And when you're in the middle of nowhere, a logger who now has been deputized feels invincible, and it's pretty dangerous what happens to activists when you're out in the forest. So you don't want to get caught, number one, because you want to be able to carry out the action, but number two, because sometimes some people can be very brutal when there's no one around to make sure that you're safe. So the activists actually used the light of the full moon to sneak up the platform and the supplies, and that's how that beautiful over 1,000-year-old redwood tree got its name.
Amazing. What a lovely story. You talk about woo-woo activism. Can you explain to our listeners about woo-woo activism and the dreaded celebritis disease?
Well, for me, there's the woo-woo activism really ties into a disconnect that I saw, where there was a group of people who were focused on the spirit and spirituality of things. And then there were the frontline activists and activists doing direct action who were focused on pointing the fingers outward, pointing the fingers at others, saying, there is the problem. So in one hand, we had people mainly doing the navel-gazing and saying, if I just meditate enough, it'll change the world. And then there were others who were not thinking about the inner landscape at all and were only focusing on the outer landscape. And so for me, as I stayed longer and longer in Luna, I really came to this awareness that what we needed was a coming together of both. That using the tree analogy, we had the branches and the roots, but what we needed was the trunk, something that would get the spirit-based activism heads out of the clouds and the earth-based activists to actually tap back into that sacred source that would have us see the earth as ourselves, that would have us see one another as a reflection of each other, so that no longer were the fingers pointing outward or the meditation only gazing inward, but rather what would it be like to see ourselves more like holistic health practitioners, where we take care of the whole being and we approach the problems in the world with a whole being, with a commitment from not just our bodies or our minds or our hearts or our spirits, but all of it together. So that to me was a very powerful turning point in my activism, when I realized I wanted to be a spiritually based activist, so that I was giving and being in service to the world, but remaining centered, grounded, and trusting in a sacred source to guide me, not just my anger and my frustration and my pain at all that's going wrong in the world. And the disease of celebritis is my laughing joke at celebrity, but I really see that celebrity is a disease that makes us think that certain people are more important, more special, more powerful than we are, just because they maybe have microphones and cameras. But I'm clear that I might be the famous activist for the tree sit, but that we wouldn't have had the success of protecting that tree and that grove around it without the people in the office answering the phones, without my phenomenal ground support crew hiking media up so that the story would get out and showing the media the mudslides and the clear cuts and the devastated area so that they would have a context to understand why some girl would be sitting in a tree, and the activists bringing me food and supplies. It was a team effort where every single person on the team was vital in what is now a success story. So for me, celebratitis is a term I came up with to remind us that every one of us is powerful, that every time we make a choice, it impacts our world. And therefore, I don't ask the question, can we make a difference? But rather the question I ask is, what kind of a difference do we want to make? Because it's impossible to not make a difference. Even choosing to do nothing has a consequence, has an impact in the world. And for me, celebratitis disempowers us. So although I try to use the attention and energy that has come to me because of the action that I took to use that energy to further the causes that I care about, I constantly remind people I'm just another human being, that I'm another person with lots of faults and lots of room to grow like any of us, but I am a human being committed to having my life be in service and hopefully make a positive difference in the world.
I'm going to ask you a really big question, Julia. How does one come to terms or come to a point of sitting in a tree for 738 days?
That is a big question, and I'm not quite sure I have the answer other than my heart breaking open. When our hearts break open, there's a lot of grief, but there's underneath that grief is a tremendous amount of love. I remind people that in the English language, the word courage comes from the French, cœur, which means heart. That the only time courage ever happens is when we face our fears, we face our grief, we face our anger, and then we choose to act from our heart, choose to act out of love anyway. When I climbed Luna, I thought I was going to be there for 3 weeks to a month. I didn't realize it was going to be 738 days. And there were some days where I was literally in the fetal position, sobbing, begging for the pain to stop, the physical pain, the terror of people trying to kill me, the grief of watching forests all around me be destroyed. And I felt like I was completely and totally broken physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And it was in those times that the more the concepts and the constructs of who I thought I was and what I thought the world was, the more those began to break apart and dissolve, the more I found a strength and a commitment and a purpose that I could never have imagined possible for myself.
When you say you climbed the tree, can you tell us, was this a project that had started and just grew? I mean, how did it go from, I mean, I can understand maybe a couple of months, but was it that you were receiving support to continue the sit in the tree, or were you receiving enough resistance from anti-activists that forced you to continue?
Yes, yes, and more yes. There was a little bit of everything. The part of what happened was I found out that the national record was 42 days. And I thought, in my naivete, I thought, well, if I break the national record, it'll create media. I can direct that media to all the other activists who've been here for a long time, and then I can come down and people can utilize that media to make people aware of the fact that at that time, 97% of the original ancient redwoods had already been cut down, and that they're continuing to cut them down to this day. Now it's closer to 98% that have been cut down. And sadly, our mainstream media sources very rarely report on the issues that are actually important to us as a species and to our survival, and not only to our survival, but to our ability to thrive on this planet. And because the mainstream media sources are where most people go to get information, we have to come up with ways to try and get them to cover the issues that are actually important, that actually matter. So I thought, well, I'll break the national record, and then I can come down, and other people will go up, and then the activists who've been here for a long, long time will be able to take this media and use it. So I broke the national record, and actually there wasn't that much media. But the little of it that did come, I started realizing pretty early on that no matter how hard I tried to get them to talk to other people, they pretty much, I was the human interest hook. I was the angle. I was the way they were going to get any information at all into their news sources. So that began this journey of how do I get the message out. And I had absolutely no desire, actually, to become a spokesperson. People know me now as a spokesperson, but they don't think about the fact that I climbed a tree because I like playing by myself. You know, I'm good at being by myself. I grew up going out into nature to be by myself. So when I heard that tree sitting was something I could do to help the redwoods, I got excited because I thought, I don't know how to be an activist, but I know how to hang out in trees by myself. So when the media came, I was really underprepared. I really didn't want to be in the spotlight. But the trees needed someone to speak for them. And when the microphones and the cameras started showing up, I made a commitment to do my very best with that opportunity to highlight this issue, to make people aware not only of the plight of the redwoods, but the plight of our old growth forests worldwide. And then that combined with the company doing everything it could to try and get me down. And at one point, my father actually came out to California and did a press conference, and he said, if Pacific Lumber Maxam Corporation, which is the corporation whose practices I was protesting, he said, if Pacific Lumber Maxam Corporation thinks they can outweigh my daughter, they don't know my daughter very well. So their tactics to try and get me down actually did further my resolve. The harder they tried, the more I knew that what I was doing was important, or they wouldn't have been trying that hard to get me down. And it really just became a day-by-day process. I gave my word that I wouldn't touch the ground until I'd done everything I could to protect the area I was in and to make people aware. And every day I woke up and said, have I done everything that I can? And that's what led me on a journey that ended up being 738 days.
Now I have a really even bigger question for you, Julia.
Oh, my.
How did you go to the bathroom in Luna?
For that, people have to read the book. The book is printed on 100% recycled paper, soy-based inks, no processed with zero chlorine bleach, and 100% of my proceeds are donated to causes that I care about. So that's the one question. If people want the answer, they can go read the book, buy it, and support a good cause.
Now, you heard it. The book's name is A Legacy of Luna, and you have to read the book to find out all the gritty little details. It certainly sounds like an arduous and I would imagine, Julia, that it had to have been eventually a labor of love. I can't imagine someone doing this out of anger. I can't imagine someone doing this out of a place of discontent. One would have to do this from a place of love, or I don't think anybody could do 738 days in a tree. I can't imagine that without love.
It's really true. When I started talking about love, a lot of people think romance, they think airy-fairy, hippy-dippy, new age, things like that. But choosing love was the hardest challenge I've ever taken in my life. And at first, I was very angry. I could see the Pacific Lumber Maxam Corporation mill. It was very, very close to where I sat for 2 years, and I had to watch as huge ancient trees that had been logged and were being carried by twin-propeller helicopter were carried to the mill, and seeing these ancient trees literally flying through the sky in front of me and being dropped off at this mill, and seeing the clear cuts, because I could see for miles and miles, and seeing the clear cuts grow day by day, seeing these forests that are thousands and millions of years old being wiped out in a matter of weeks, and that pain turned to rage, and I was very, very angry. But that rage was consuming me, and I had to find a way to work with that and process that, or I would have had to give up and come down, because it was like a candle burning at both ends, and I was the one burning up in the middle. And the answer that kept coming to me was, Julia, you must simply love. And there were many times when I laughed and I scoffed, and I thought, I can think of a lot of things right now, and love's not one of them. But that was the answer that I kept coming back to, and that's the answer that's driven me all these years since coming down, that it's love that drives me to take the actions that I take, to speak the words that I speak. And I'm a human being, and I fall short of that commitment. And when I do, I make amends where I need to, and I get back up and say, that is my driving force. And from everything I've been through, I can speak beyond a shadow of a doubt that love creates a strength and a power that is far beyond what we know ourselves capable of. I went through the worst storm in recorded history of California. I went through a company trying to kill me. I went through people trying to kill me. Even after coming down, where I had severe threats on my life, and again, people trying to take my life and facing very challenging situations, that commitment to love has given me answers and tools and resources and strengths that I would never have known was possible.
I just find it amazing. Anyone growing up in the United States has historically learned about the Redwood Forest in school. We teach this in school. How can we destroy what we teach?
I had the same question. I was completely stunned when I heard that they were still cutting down trees that are hundreds to thousands of years old. It takes 500 years to create 1 inch of topsoil in the Redwood ecosystem. 500 years for 1 inch of topsoil. And when they clear cut, this is temperate rainforest here. The Redwoods are part of the rainforest ecosystem we have in the United States. And on a rainy day, a heavy rainy winter day, 1 inch of topsoil can disappear in a day. 500 years wiped out in a single afternoon. And it's astounding that we not only allow that to happen, but that this country even supports that in happening. And it's really a wake-up call for all of us to look at what's really going on in our lives and take stock and say, what's of real value and how do we put real value back on the conversation table versus the perceived value that so much of our life is based upon.
Who tried to kill you, Julia, and what was done in the aftermath as far as consequences or repercussions for that, for them?
Well, the company hovered a twin-propeller Chinook helicopter 75 feet above my head. These helicopters have over 300-mile-an-hour updrafts underneath them. It's like witnessing or being in the middle of a hurricane 180 feet up. That's, 18 stories high in a building with those kind of winds whipping, and not being in a building but being on a branch. They also surrounded me with security guards for 10 days, cutting off my supplies, trying to starve me down. When that didn't work, they started blowing air horns all night and all day for 8 days to try and sleep deprive me down. There were people who came up and shot guns at me. Yeah, after I came down, there were actually similar things that happened to me with guns and bomb threats and knives and things like that. And it's incredible to me that people would go to such lengths. And part of what it showed me is the truth about authentic power versus power over, that there's two power dynamic models. One is power over and one is power with. And in a power over game, I would lose. I don't have billions of dollars. I don't have war machines. I don't have military. But in a power with model, we connect to something greater than ourselves. And it was really incredible for me to realize that. I was, to this day, I'm a little astounded at how intense some of the reactions have been and occasionally continue to be to not only the activism that I took in the tree, but my activism since coming down to the ground. And what I realized, though, is that power over models constantly have to fight to have their power, because it's not an authentic power. They're not standing in connection with others. Their power comes from disconnect, from destroying, from oppressing, from manipulating. So they constantly have to destroy, oppress, and manipulate to maintain their power. Whereas a power with my commitment to living as one with the earth and all of its beings, including people, I've had a gun pulled in my face and been able to maintain my power. And realizing that that is part of that power of love that we speak of, that it is an ability to transform some very intense situations. I ended up winning over some of the security guards who were there to try and starve me down. I've been able to talk people out of very intense situations, and it's an example for us to realize that's really what's going on in our world today, that this unending war that's erupting everywhere, it seems, is because so many people believe power only comes with power over. And in that model, you always have to have violence, oppression, and manipulation in order to maintain it.
And for those of us, we're going to have to take a short break, but before we leave, I want to remind our listeners that we're not talking about Iraq. We're talking about the Redwood Forest and a young woman that did no more but sit in a tree and look at the unbelievable attack that she received. You know, if this was a war zone, which is, to you, it actually ended up being a war zone, Julia, we could, I suppose, understand what was going on. But what what drives our society when we become advocators of such violence for someone protecting our ecosystem? We do have to take a break right now. Before we break, I want everybody to know that you can. When we come back, you can call Julia and speak to her, ask her a question at 888-228-4494. And always please remember to visit our website, www.thepeoplespeakradio.org. You can stream our show live from wherever you are, even if you're not in our listening area. And for those of you that miss our shows, go to our archives and our iPod Ready podcast for information on upcoming shows. We'll be back in just a minute with Julia Butterfly.
This is Pete Seeger. What country comes to mind when you hear this? The government illegally spies on civilians, produces phony news reports. People are imprisoned without charge or access to a lawyer. Prisoners are tortured and killed, and an illegal war launched on the basis of lies in which illegal weapons are used against civilians, against journalists and hospitals. Unfortunately, the United States government is behind these actions. Fortunately, our Constitution has a remedy. It's called impeachment. Ask your Congress member to impeach George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
We invite you to a new International Politics Lobby 8, a chat room on PalTalk, the world's largest online community with over 4 million users. Talk or text to people from all over the world. Participate in discussion and debate about politics and other issues. Or just sit back and watch and listen. Open 24/7, a new International Politics Lobby 8 in the Social Issues Politics category on PalTalk.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the People Speak Radio Show. Our guest tonight is Julia Butterfly, the writer of Legacy of Luna and the Luna Tree Sit. This is just an amazing experience. Julia, we do have some questions from our audience that we're going to start taking.
Great.
And our first one is Steve from New Mexico.
Thank you, Busman. It's Santa Fe.
I'm sorry, Santa Fe.
Julia, first of all, I'd like to thank you for all the work that you put in trying to protect our environment and our world. I think people should, you know, see your example and go for it. And that kind of goes into my question. You know, I've spent a lot of time protesting various things, but there's a question that I come up with, and it's how do I tell the common person to do, how is it best, I guess, something that they can do to help?
Mm.
You know, the people that are involved with working and raising a family that, you know, can't climb a tree or do something else. How is it, in your opinion, best for them to take a stance and help our environment? And thank you.
That's a great question. Thank you. The first thing I always do is look at where I stand, that my commitment is walking the talk. So the first thing we can always do to make the biggest difference, including when we communicate, is to lead by example. And that doesn't mean just the to-do list of, oh, look at all the things I do to walk more lightly on the planet, like energy-efficient light bulbs and eating organic and choosing a low-impact food choice like vegetarian and vegan and walking and riding our bikes more and driving our cars less and getting a hybrid and all these kind of things. Those are all good choices, but it has to be more than just a to-do list. So number one, it's about recognizing that conscious choices are a way for us to celebrate the gift of life. That it's not, I call it the granolier than thou. Because there's a point where it's like, oh yeah, well, I do all of these things, what do you do? And after a while, people get overwhelmed. People are working very hard, as you said, and people with families are trying to make ends meet. And so that thing that sometimes comes up where it's, oh, look at all the things I do and you have to do them too, it tends to shut people off. Whereas if we're leading by example, and which includes joy, the celebration of life, laughter, community, honoring one another, finding reasons to celebrate each other, excuses to celebrate each other, that this is what leading by example means. And the everyday choices for me are actually profound, and it kind of goes back to the origination of what is now considered the environmental movement of things like Earth Day, that a lot of things that we quit talking about because it got taken over actually by corporations, things like reduce, reuse, recycle. Well, all of a sudden it became recycle, recycle, recycle. Why? Because if we recycle, we can always buy more and make more. Yet, in particular in America, we have the largest planetary footprint out of any other person on the planet. And so it's not recycle, it's reduce. And in a consumer-driven society, they don't want us to be doing that. So we have to look at where can we reduce our footprint? How can I use less energy? How can I use less water? How can I use less resources? My commitment is to not use disposables, because what are we throwing away? When we say we're going to throw something away, where is away? If we heard a chainsaw every time we used a paper towel, a paper napkin, a paper cup, would our choices change? If we had to walk in an unlined oil pit in Ecuador and Africa every time we used a plastic to-go container, a plastic cup, a plastic lid, a plastic bag, would our choices change? Because we've been tricked into thinking there's such a thing as a way, since we've been tricked into thinking that recycle all you want will make more, we're not connected to the impact of our daily choices. So it's simple things like carrying a mug, carrying a reusable container. Everywhere I go, I have a backpack. I bring my own mug, my own reusable container, utensils, and bag, and water bottle with me everywhere that I go. It's just part of my outfit for the day. And then it's really looking at all of those little things and recognizing that they add up to something big. And we've forgotten that because we're not connected to the thread that connects our choices to the end result. It's taken to a quote, away, unquote, and we think there's such a thing. And in reality, even our recyclables, a lot of the recycling is sent to countries where they have much less stringent environmental and human rights rules, where we end up polluting the planet and communities elsewhere and think that we're doing a good job. So that simple mantra of reduce, reuse, recycle, I added two things to the front of it, which is respect and rethink. when we respect life because we see it as a part of ourselves, we automatically begin to rethink every choice. We say, is this something I really want to do to myself? When we do something to the planet, we're doing it to ourselves. When we do something to another human being, we're doing that to ourselves. When we begin the process of living a life of respect, of living a sacred path, we begin to rethink what we're doing, and automatically we begin to reduce, not as a, oh, I have to in order to save the planet, but rather, my heart longs to lighten my footprint. My heart longs to celebrate the gift of life through the choices that I make. And then the final R-E word can always be rejoice. Make sure and have fun, laugh, celebrate. And when we share our passions and our commitments with others, to remember to share it with love and with joy so that it's a celebration and an invitation for people to participate instead of a finger-pointing granolier than thou.
I love that, granolier than thou. That's just wonderful. And I like one of the things that I find that's great about your message, Julia, everybody has a message, but you're bringing life to your message. You have taken you've taken a chainsaw and attached to a napkin at McDonald's, and suddenly that napkin has become a tree, and someone took the life of a tree. And you know, I think that's part of the problem. We have to realize the consequences. A way isn't just a way. A way is in our backyard, and if it isn't in our backyard, it's in your neighbor's backyard. And I think that's just fascinating. We have a question from Neely in Houston. Neely, what is your question for Julia, please?
Yes, good evening, Julia, and I really honor the work you have done. It is unbelievable and unimaginable for me. But my question is, why isn't there enough? Okay, I'm sorry. I hope I'm louder now. Why isn't there enough, like in the stores, when you buy groceries? I usually take my bags. I have a little linen bag. I go grocery shopping, or a backpack, whatever, if I don't buy for the family. But why isn't there enough in a regular supermarket, not in Whole Foods or so? Not enough reduction in using the plastic ware or the plastic bags. In no supermarket you find paper bags, but then paper bags are made from trees also. It's very difficult here to go. I come from Europe and we go shopping into a little stores with our Tupperware we have at home and get lunch meat in there or whatever we buy. And we get milk fresh. You return the bottle, you get a new one. Why isn't it here? Why is it such a big problem to get this option like we had in Europe? It was very easy to recycle, to live green. But here, it is very, very difficult. Okay, I don't want to hold up. My dog is barking. I'm sorry.
Well, you're right. It is challenging to make conscious choices here. And part of the reason it's challenging is because of two main factors. Number one, in America, we're comfortably numb. We have someone who does not win the electoral vote and somehow ends up president. In another country, people took over the streets and refused to leave and set up encampments when that happened. In this country, we go out and we maybe march for a day and yell and scream and stomp our feet and then get upset when it doesn't end up in the media, and then we sit back home on our recliner and click the channels. So we really are kept at a nice numbness here. And we don't want to shake the boat too much because we have things like house payments and car payments and things that we're comfortable with, and we're afraid of losing that comfort. And as a result, we silence ourselves and take a step back when we should often be taking a step forward. And another reason is because our economy is based on consumption. We have a consumer-based society. Even if you look in the mainstream media, we're often, you see words like consumer, taxpayer, and products. You very rarely even see the word citizen anymore in our mainstream media. It's very, very rare to find the word citizen. And the reason is because citizenry actually requires activism. This country, although it was founded on genocide, and we have to acknowledge that as part of the history, the second layer, there are really also very positive things about this history, and some of that founding was on activism. I like to remind people the fact that I'm a woman and can wear pants is because women before me cared enough about my life to risk arrest, rape, and death for something as simple that we take for granted now in this country, like a woman's right to wear pants. So something that we take that for granted, that's that simple in our lives now, had to be fought that hard for. We have to look at what's going on now, and we look at things like there's no longer the word citizenry in our collective language because our mainstream media reflects quite a bit of our collective language. So we don't, that language is disappearing. We have an amnesia of what citizenry requires. It requires vigilance. It requires commitment. It requires conscious, committed action. But consumers just requires you to go in debt and buy things. And as we're nearing this holiday season, I like to remind people about that, that one of the best ways to change things, including how much disposables are at the marketplace, is don't go shopping. Show someone you love them by not buying them something, but rather spending quality time together. In nature, where I go to find my wisdom, in the wintertime, nature isn't out being busy and filling up the malls and running around frenetic and stressed out. It's taking its time. It's drawing its energy back in. It's letting go of what no longer serves. So if we want to change things like the disposability consciousness of this country, it is difficult because we're having to restore memory. We're having to shift a tide. But it can start with something as simple as, I love you so much, I'm not going to buy you anything, and here's my reasons why. Can we please go make a meal together and spend quality time together? It actually, that thread does connect to something like plastic and paper bags and the disposability consciousness of the United States.
We also don't ever want to forget that we are a capitalist society, and there is a lot of money in paper and plastic bags, and that's something that we can't forget, and we have to understand that. All right, we have a caller on line three, Julia, for you. Mike from California. Mike, your question for Julia?
Hi, Julia. First of all, I want to say I think you're a very lovely person outside and inside, and it seems like your journey started out, you know, you were alone. What I'm wondering about is, are you networked to other groups? Do the Native Americans, do corporations, do the groups that are trying to stop the depletion of the rainforest, are those people also working with you? Have you joined a lot of people, or have a lot of people joined you? Thank you.
Thank you. It's a great question, and part of the reason it's a great question is because it speaks to something that's really important for us to look at. In systems like capitalism, which is based on competition, it is all the more vital that we focus our energy on collaboration versus competition, that we have to find ways to work together, even across issues, where we have to realize that we are not movements, plural, but one movement of people walking and working and committed together in healing this planet and all the life on it, of restoring ourselves to a world that works for all, not just for an elite few. So collaboration is key. And yes, I actually started Circle of Life while I was in Luna because of the attention and energy coming at me, and I didn't want it to just stop with me because then it would just be the Julia Butterfly Show, and that actually wouldn't make much of a difference in the world. So when I started Circle of Life now 9 years ago, it was with a commitment to collaboration, and ever since starting Circle of Life, we've literally worked with and supported thousands of grassroots organizations all over the world. I've been really inspired to work with grassroots organizations versus the very larger organizations because I find that grassroots organizations are the places where people can get involved in their communities, where they live, and build community at the same time. Oftentimes in the larger organizations, we can send an email and write a check, but we're not exactly connected to one another. And for me, enough of our world is isolating, is disconnect. So how can we, as we work on doing things like protecting the rainforest, how can we also build community and connections with one another at the same time? So I've worked with and continue to work with Native peoples all over the world, with some corporations. I work with some businesses, although I limit that because I have very, very high standards for what is a company that actually is committed to what you know, what is more than just a profit motive, but is committed to helping the planet and helping people while making money. And also working with individuals and communities around the world that aren't necessarily organization-based but have a threat face their community and need some extra energy and support to stop that threat. And it's been incredible. I've been very, very honored and blessed to work with people every single day that just humble me to my core, who come up with the most creative and committed ways to not only stand against what's wrong, but to create what's right, and that really inspires me.
Well, I'll tell you, many years ago, my daughter accused me of being a tree hugger. She goes, and I mean that literally, in many ways. And one of the things that she says, why is it every time I have a camera in my hand, you go hug a tree? And I said, I have no idea. I'm very attracted to them. Now, let me ask you, Julia, what's your tree?
The What's Your Tree program is something that we started because I've been told so many times by people, thank you for sitting in that tree, Julia. I never could have done that. And I always tell people, well, neither could have I. Yesterday was the 10-year anniversary of my standing at the base of Luna and saying, I'm going to go up there for 3 weeks, and ended up spending the next 2 years of my life there. And that day, 10 years ago, as of yesterday, I never could have done what I ended up doing. If you had been standing there and said, you're going to spend the next 2 years of your life up there and go through all the things that I went through, I would have laughed, and then I would have screamed, and then I would have run away. I would have never done it. But luckily, life doesn't work that way. And it gives us only what we can handle, and then gives us a little bit more as an opportunity to grow. And What's Your Tree is a program that says, okay, maybe your tree is not a redwood or a Douglas fir or a palm tree, but What's Your Tree is symbolic. What is it in your life that can call you and cause you to be bigger than you know yourself to be? What is it in your life that can call you to be excited about growing in the uncomfortable places instead of running away from them? And What's Your Tree is a program that we created that leverages a lot of the lessons that I learned while living in Luna, as well as a lot of the tools and resources that my organization created, as well as partnered with other organizations developing over the years. And it's a 7-week program that actually takes you through a journey of self-discovery. And it's not a self-help discovery. It is a, you are more powerful than you know yourself to be. And to find that place, it's a journey. And this is a program that helps you take that journey. If you're committed not only to trying to change the world, but if you're committed to having a life that makes a difference for yourself, for those you're closest to, and the world, this is a program that can help take you on that journey and help you uncover it. And it's really exciting. It's actually just being launched out in the world, and already there's more communities that want the program than we have the ability to support. But if people are interested in this program, again, it's a 7-week program once a week, the 8th week being a service-based project, because our commitment is that once you recognize how powerful you are, you want to make a difference in the world. You want to serve. And if people are interested in that, they can go to our website, circleoflife.org, and on the homepage, there's a way to link to the What's Your Tree program and to get your information in.
Well, you know, one of our previous guests, Professor Howard Zinn, Julia, once said, when asked a similar question, because this is one of the questions that we ask people on our show, a majority of the people that come on our show are activists in some form or another, and we always say, how does one make a difference? What is your advice? And he said something that was quite profound. He said, do something, do anything, just don't do nothing. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a brilliant piece. And I think it simplifies it to the point of, you know, anybody can do anything and it will help. Let me ask you about one thing that I, to me, is very important as a metaphysician and a teacher of earth. I don't know if you can teach meditation, but a meditative practitioner, and I run workshops. Sacred spaces. How did you come across your sacred space in Luna? I mean, I can't imagine that you wouldn't have.
Yes, and I really when everything else had crumbled around me, all there was sacred space. Because all there is sacred space. And our challenge is that we've created a lot of myths and stories over time that have us be blocked to that experience.
Yes.
So as my walls came crumbling, all that was left was sacred space. And now I get to experience life as that sacred space. It is important to take quiet time and quiet space in this, what I call the bigger, better, faster now society, taking a moment of silence, taking a moment to breathe with one's head leaned back against a tree to see if you can hear the sound of the nutrients running up and down the trunk. It is a revolutionary act. It is an act of recognizing that life is sacred. And it is important to take those moments to be still, to be listened, to be open to the messages of the universe. And the more we're willing to let go of who we think we are and what we think the world is, the more we come in contact with life is sacred space.
And that was Julia Butterfly. Thank you very much, Julia. It has been an honor having you with us, and indeed, life and all of life is a sacred space. Find your tree and do something with it. We here on The People Speak have found a tree that we speak out with, and it is the show. You can join us at www.thepeoplespeakradio.org, and you can listen to us live. Our next week's guest, our anticipated guest, will be Afif Safi. He is the Palestinian ambassador. He was also the ambassador of Palestine to the Vatican. And that will be Tuesday night, the 18th, at 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you very much, Julia.
Thank you so much.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of death, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you.
Hi there, this is Christoph Goes. I'm playing on BBS Radio, where you can check tracks from my new album, Turning Inside. Because if it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Hey everybody, this is Nancy Drake. I am a star of science fiction show Lex the Dark Zone. Well, I hope you're listening to Dr. Fred Bell's show on bbsradio.com. Well, if you want to do Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy?
Health Science and...
Oh, what was it?
Health Science and...
Health Science...
Just say you're listening to Dr. Bell's Health Science and...
And Energy?
Health Science and...
Energy Show?
That yeah. works. In fact, I can
edit... Health, Energy, and Science Show.
Health Science and...
We just call it the Dr. Bell Show.
Okay, well, that's what I did.
Same thing, only a little shorter. Yeah, same thing. Health Science and... Thank you.
Let me in.